AgBioScience is supported by Indiana Farm Bureau.
I think when you look at the go-to market, you have to understand the cash flow, the sales cycle, exactly who your customer is, and the value that you're producing there. So we spend a lot of time with startups, with venture capital, trying to explain that. Hopefully we can get through to them on the early side and it's not, I told you so afterwards. But that's normally the thing where a lot of people are knocking on our door asking how that works.
Welcome to Ag Bioscience, the number one podcast in the world for innovation in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture. Here is your host, Agrinovis CEO, Mitch Fraser.
Welcome back to Ag Bioscience. Identifying customer needs, jobs to be done. It's the core of innovation. But what are the jobs that need to be done? What are those things left undone as we head into the 2025 growing season? And what does the current economy, the trade environment, and just overall farmer sentiment mean for innovators and the farmers they serve? Here to help us make sense of it is Brad Fruth, Director of Innovation at Bex Hybrids, the largest privately held retail seed brand in America. Brad, welcome back to Ag Bioscience.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
It is great to have you. Brad, I think before we get into innovation and all of the opportunities that you see, it's so important to understand what customers, farmers are experiencing, specifically as we head into this 2025 growing season here in the U.S. Give us a sense, what's on farmers' minds? What's the state of the current ag economy?
As we look into this next growing season, it's no surprise that commodity prices are down. We're entering rather a cycle of where net farm income is going to be down from what we've seen. Farmers have enjoyed good prices. And so as we really move into this next year, as farmers have met with their accountant to look at end of year planning, we are looking at less income on the farm, which trickles down to those of us that are in the input side. And so our friends in equipment are probably feeling that first. Those of us that are in seed and chemical are looking at what this next year holds. Now, with that being said, though, I think that these times where we have a tightening are great opportunities for innovation. So folks that are really focused on net farm income, how do we continue to drive that innovation? There's still a desire to push new products, to look at new things, as long as the value is there. So even though it's maybe a little leaner than what we've seen in the past, there's still money, there's still new things happening, but it has to be laser focused on delivering value.
I think it's such an important reminder when you look at just the current macro. USDA shares that net farm income, net farm cash income specifically, down roughly 3% year over year. The Heartland region, the region that Indiana, Illinois, all of us here in the Midwest fall into, I think down 18% is what I saw this morning on some new data from USDA, is an environment that continues to evolve, but you can't cut your way to growth. To your point, there's still going to be opportunities for innovation. Austerity does create opportunity. As you look at this growing season, specifically here in 25, any big trends that you're seeing aside from the macroeconomic, any big trends, tailwinds or headwinds otherwise?
I think everybody has their eyes on right now what's going to happen federally. Obviously, with the recent announcements around tariffs, from an input standpoint, people are trying to decide how is this going to affect maybe my potash, my NP and K that might already be pre-booked there. But I think as people look into the next year, I mean, as we went through this last fall, a lot of our field shows and customer meetings that we've been going through at Bex over the last couple of weeks, there is still enthusiasm out there. And so farmers are excited to talk about new products. Now, they're also talking about a lot of our practical farm research. And so what's the smart way to maybe use products? And are all of them necessary and things that I could maybe skimp on? I mean, it's no different than if you probably in our own household budgets, as we've had inflationary pressure, we're all evaluating that spend and what are some ways that we might have to maybe cut back on a couple of things there. So I think as we move into the next year, we still find farmer enthusiasm out there. And again, they're still looking at new products, but maybe what do we need to tweak on the fertility side? I think as we've been through the countryside as well, there's a lot of new equipment out there. And so you're probably going to see that start to slow as, again, we've seen our friends in equipment see the brunt of some of that right now. But there's still plenty of enthusiasm out there.
As you look at all the things that are on the balance sheet and income statement of a farmer, and for those that supply them, And we saw a big rise over the last couple of years in biologicals, big moves by Corteva and others acquiring biologicals. Do you think we'll see here in this growing season some of those trades? You talked about NPK, where maybe I can use some biologicals and maybe not as much nitrogen. Or are there other ways that we can do this where it may look a little bit more complicated, right, in terms of the what's actually on the field, but the actual cost could go down?
Yeah, so I think there's a trade-off there. The biological space, you know, depending on who you look at, I mean, there are literally thousands of companies out there in that. And farmers, there's a fatigue right now, I think, with that space, if we're really being honest. I personally would not really want to be in the biological sales right now and rolling down the driveway of a farmer just because there's a lot of promises there. And so I think if a farmer is confident in that product and they've already seen that product, then there's probably a confidence that they could start to do that. On the flip side, we've also heard a lot of producers that say, I'm not going to skimp because yes, you can trim expenses, but there's a potential that you're going to trim my income. And so if I'm not producing the same amount of bushels, they don't want to put that at risk because that is a tried and true practice. And that is not a guaranteed income, but that's a method that is a path of least resistance there. So there is a space for biologicals, but I think farmers have to be confident in that product. And so I don't think you'll see a mass migration just happen all at once. You'll continue to see more of the, let me look at it, let me test it, let me make sure that it performs in my environment. The tricky thing with biologicals right now is that they do work, but they don't work everywhere all the time in all environments. The same thing with seed, right? Not every hybrid number works everywhere all the time. That's why we have multiple different hybrids there. So I think in the biological space, you're going to continue to see investment there. And there are some great things that are going on, but I don't think you're going to see like a mass migration all of a sudden where people are trying to cut costs because it's going to put at risk their income.
It is interesting when you look at a commodity market, when grain being a commodity, the one variable that a producer can control is, or at least optimize for, is yield, right? Like the one thing I can do is produce more. Like that is a very clear path. Any other areas of innovation that you think put producers in a good spot here in 25 to really drive yield?
Yeah, so I think we continue to see, depending on who you listen to, about a bushel or bush and a half of genetic gain in new hybrids and varietals. There is the promise, I think, in the DNA editing space. We're all looking forward to the day that that really ramps up in a commercial way that we can bring value there. But I would say when it comes to like the on-farm innovation, we're equally as excited about things that are tied to the production. So that is a real easy way that you can walk onto a farm and say, you know, your cost per acre to run a tractor, to run a combine, to run a sprayer is X. And how can I help you lower that or optimize that? So yes, it is both and. It's we need to help them increase yield. We also need to help them be very efficient in how they operate there.
Brad, you look at number of innovations, especially in that area where it's not, clearly you would assume Beck's Hybrids is focused on plant science and really getting that right. But you're looking at everything from equipment to software to different areas of innovation throughout the production system. Give us an idea how you think about this. How do you think about the market? How do you evaluate this is the right place to put a bet? This is the right place to say, hey, come back and see me soon.
Obviously, at BEX, we are blessed with the ability to access our Practical Farm Research Program. And I just heard this last week that we're going from about 100 or 110 studies this year to 150 and really doing an increase. And some of that is honestly being driven by our move farther west. And so our friends in Kansas and Nebraska don't always grow corn and soybeans. It involves milo. It involves maybe more wheat. And so a lot of that expansion is to help with those other crops. So we are very blessed to have Practical Farm Research to really look at the agronomy side of on-farm. What is a farmer actually dealing with as they look at products, practices, and equipment there? On the Beck side, so we also run our own farm. And a lot of things that are going on there, when we look at new innovations there, it is maybe more about the founder team and making sure that they understand the problem and can really help us be a good partner. So many people know that at BEX, we don't make direct investments into companies. So when we're looking at how do we help our corporate partners, I'm looking for people that I can partner with where I can become a customer, not an investor. And then how can I help them maybe refine that product and help me with an exact use case there? So a lot of our conversations, yes, are product based. How can you help me solve this problem or a job to be done? At the same time, I'm trying to build a relationship to understand who they are, what makes them tick, and where can we find ways that we can work together, and how can I help them solve a problem so that they can help me solve problems?
One of the greatest problems, I think you and I agree, for ag tech, ag bioscience companies is go-to-market. And what you just walked through is a brilliant case of how BEX can partner with these young companies. We're going to dig into it right after this. Ag Bioscience is supported by Indiana Farm Bureau.
From berries to dairies, from crop advisors to data analyzers, Indiana Farm Bureau is at the forefront of the top issues impacting Indiana agriculture. No matter your role in the ag industry, Indiana Farm Bureau membership means you'll always have a champion and an advisor. And because so much of your time is focused on your own enterprise, it's also good to know Indiana Farm Bureau is always working to fight for the future of agriculture. We come together to advocate for rural viability, the protection of property rights, competitive tax policies, and against burdensome regulations. Whether our members need a door opened, an impact in public policy, or an ally to strengthen their communities, Indiana Farm Bureau is there. We are the unified voice for all agriculture. To learn more about the benefits of Indiana Farm Bureau membership, go to infb.org.
Welcome back to Ag Bioscience, talking with Brad Firth, Director of Innovation at BEX Hybrids, the nation's largest privately held retail seed brand. Brad, we were just talking about the ways in which you like to partner, become a customer, really understand who these early stage ag bioscience companies are. Look, business models matter. And I think when we look at just the macro of dollars into ag tech from venture, we look at all the challenges that you opened with around the current farm economy, there's some really tough sledding ahead. As you look at business models, what are you seeing that's working for these early stage companies, and how is it, maybe an example or two of how you're working with some of these companies to really get them from, hey, I have an MVP, I have an early stage product, I really have to get in front of farmers.
It's different, I think, in agriculture. And so we find often as farmers that happen to own a business at BEX Hybrid, which is a nice way of saying that we're in the dirt every single day, is that we find whether you're venture capital, you know, all these people that are really don't have ag roots struggle with the go-to market. They don't understand the farming economy. They don't understand these cycles. They also maybe aren't used to dealing in an environment where you're getting paid one time per year. At BEX, we run an annual business. Our farmer pays us one time per year. So our friends in like B2B SaaS don't understand that you just can't fix a problem, push code 2 weeks later, and then you get instant feedback. That doesn't happen when you work in this very long cycle. So a lot of what maybe works in the corporate or with a VC and other verticals does not apply to agriculture. So having a very close tie to the farm, and a lot of us at BEX are involved in our family farms. You know, there wasn't maybe enough room for us to stay and work in that, so we all have to get real jobs. So a lot of us understand because either one, our family is dealing with the ups and the downs. And so we know the customer really well because we are the customer. So a lot of our friends, when they look at go-to-market, don't understand that. The other thing is there are relationships in ag that are generational. And so some people don't understand how a seed company works with an equipment company or maybe a crop protection company. And so when they look at that go-to market, some things that might look good on paper don't always translate to reality at the farm gate. The one thing at BEX that we do not take for granted is the trust that we have with customers. And so a lot of people come to us and they're like, well, how do you build that trust? Our philosophy and our go-to market is that we got to be excellent at customer service, and we do not take that trust for granted there. So a lot of people on the go-to-market side, it depends, honestly, on products. You know, we've seen the digital space really struggle because there was an assumption that if I just roll onto a farm, I can sell software, not have all this overhead. And we found that that doesn't really work, that that's probably going to be a value add. So you're going to link it with equipment, seed, fert, chem. That's not to say that you can't do it, but anything involved in the direct production, we look at some of the work that's happening in the labor space. There's been some really good companies come out of there because that's not linked with one of the other inputs there. So I think when you look at the go-to market, you have to understand the cash flow, the sales cycle, exactly who your customer is, and the value that you're producing there. So we spend a lot of time with startups, with venture capital, trying to explain that. Hopefully we can get through to them on the early side and it's not, I told you so afterwards. But that's normally the thing where a lot of people are knocking on our door asking how that works. It is a really tough conversation, honestly, when you have to sit down with somebody and go, you're a value add, or there's no way that you're going to be able to ask for the margin that you think you are when you roll up to that farm gate. Every startup, a lot of startups have this hockey stick chart that shows, you know, I'm going to go from 1 to 1 million units in 6 months. That's not reasonable. So it's also helping them really evaluate what's that reasonable expectation.
As you look at, we're in the fourth or fifth chapter of ag tech, talking specifically this hardware-software connection. Is there room for a new go-to-market model? I mean, is there a, maybe room's not the right question. Is there a need for a new go-to-market model?
I think the answer is yes. And the only way to make that work is a partnership model. So I am biased heavily, but I think there is room. And you're going to have to work with the existing providers. It has never worked out well for somebody to come in. There's been a lot of people that have tried, that have literally spent billions of dollars to try to break that up. And then at the end found out it was about relationships and partnerships. So ag is not an easy vertical that you're going to break in and totally disrupt. Most people have found that you can maybe cause some initial disruption, but if you really want market saturation, you're going to have to partner. So I think there's great opportunity, actually, for new business models. We've seen some really interesting products come in fintech, and I love my friends in the banking world, and I think there's a lot of room that we could work together on some new types of models and new types of products there. We talked about equipment earlier. There's some really cool things that we could probably do in the equipment space. And then everybody's looking at what does consolidation look like? So we know in the future, we know that there's going to be less farms that are going to cover the same, if not more, acres. So that's why a lot of us now look at acres. We don't look at customers. And we're going to continue to see consolidation as capitalism works. So those are, I think, some of the opportunities. Again, if you don't have good relationships with folks and then understand what they're being driven by, that's probably the biggest hindrance to new business models, is that the incentives don't align. And so as companies, as startups look to work, it's getting those incentives aligned. And that can either happen naturally through, hey, let's build a new product, or it can sometimes happen through pain, like I'm not generating enough sales or income, and how do I adapt to a new market?
I want to spend some time on that, because I think you talk about consolidation and then this idea of discovery where, hey, I'm not generating enough revenue. I'm not generating enough net income. There's some really interesting data that I just uncovered here within the last couple of days, where you look at PitchBooks out with some data that shows that last year, 2024, 30% of funding was in a down round, meaning, you know, the enterprise value of that company was either flat or less than it was the prior funding round. And then you look at big ag companies, picked six publicly traded companies, and I think in total, they were, you know, slightly less than $20 billion in aggregate of cash on the balance sheet. You look at this compressed, potentially compressed enterprise value of some of these early stage companies that are still kind of figuring it out. You look at this big balloon of cash that is sitting on the sidelines, sitting on the balance sheets. And then let's not overlook that prime lending rate is 6x what it was 4 years ago. You end up in this era where consolidation isn't probable. It's probably very likely.
Yeah. So one of the biggest points of contention we have with companies is on valuation.
Sure
now,
it is.
We don't directly invest, so you can call yourself whatever you want. And we knew that some of the stuff that has been happening over the last 8 or 10 years, you look at those valuations and all of us in the input space are going, there's no way that those companies are going to be able to get a fraction of what they say that they're worth on paper. And so that's where I think we see maybe outside of ag influence happening. And I love my venture capital friends. We have many of them. I love them all. And to your point, the financial environment is not what it once was. I mean, I've told many, many people, like, if you have a $100 million ag company, what people don't realize is you're a big deal. And that doesn't translate into other verticals. I mean, we could probably slap together a website and find some software and find some VCs to put some money in, and boom, we're worth $100 million. That does not translate in ag. And so oftentimes these valuations, even if you take the price that they're charging for their product, and there are roughly, don't quote me on this, but like 40,000 row crop farmers in the entire United States, this stuff does not pencil out. And so we hate to be the Debbie Downer in those situations, but you can do some quick napkin math and go, you are way overvaluated. And the VC, unfortunately, sometimes it's too late, or they've not really dug into the numbers there. So that's a problem that I think that's getting corrected right now as we see that happening. And unfortunately, that happens in a down round. So I think the biggest thing that we continue to work with our VC and investment friends that want to put money into ag is trying to help them not do some of that stuff, because then that looks negatively on ag when they have a down round or there's an exit that isn't at this super inflated number. It's like, guys, we told you that this wasn't going to pencil out. So we don't really want that negative press. And so it's helping them understand that. And as you mentioned, prime is up. So some of the venture stuff, if you're working in ag, there are opportunities. Venture is a great option. There's also traditional debt financing. Here in Indiana, we have some great angel networks that have been fantastic to ag. There are lots of opportunities. And if I could brag for a second, we really like what Scott and Croft are doing that came out of the Dial thing. You look out of that, they've had some amazing news here in the last couple of weeks of what their ARR was, because they were solving a problem. And hopefully they're going to be essentially generating a lot of income here, and they don't have to go back to that well of venture. So if you are solving a problem, if you're a startup and you can stay lean and mean, which is what a lot of my advice to these folks are, like in ag, do not go hire 40 developers and get a big fancy office. Like, stay lean and mean. You can do amazing things and you can generate income. You don't have to go to this debt financing side.
Sage advice from many reps that I know you've seen. Brad, we could spend all day talking. We need to maybe hit one more question as we wrap up here. You and I have talked a lot about this book, Competing Against Luck, Clayton Christensen, an amazing author. He talks a lot about this idea of like what jobs need to be done and when will customers pull a product into their life and why do they do it, right? It's just a different framework to thinking about what innovations really needed. As you look at production ag, you look at the world that you see each and every day, what's the job that's left to be done that isn't being done today that you say, gosh, if somebody would just go solve that?
I'm going to cheat and maybe ask the question in a different way.
Really?
So if it's not one thing we've been looking at and talking to a lot of people about, is that I have not, in my short lifetime, and if you look at really the last 100 years, I've not seen a major innovation change happen without making a direct impact to production. And so when you look at the first yield monitor, now we use that data every single day, but that was actually first put in so that farmers could take a full header and maximize the input going into that combine. Now, later on, we figured out that there's a bunch of stuff around data. We even look at the autonomy stuff now. That is about maximizing spraying. It's lowering my cost per acre. And so I'm struggling with maybe some of the new stuff that doesn't first solve a direct on-farm problem. Because that's something, that nomenclature, you can talk to any farmer and say, hey, let's talk about your spray program. And you can have a conversation there and you can say, well, what if I could do this 24 hours, or I could run this with a diesel engine or an electric engine or whatever that is. That is a relational thing that everybody single relates to. So that's where I have really, really struggled. Now, it doesn't mean that there's a play for digital. Doesn't mean that there's a play for new things that might add on to it. But even if you want to look at precision planting in the last couple of years, they solved a real problem on a planter and then found out there was a ton of awesome data. And there's all these auxiliary products. But the original thing that got the customer hooked was that they were solving a singulation problem on that planter. And then all those auxiliary stuff happened. So I'm a bit maybe jaded on thinking that whatever that thing is, if it's autonomy, if it's robotics, if it's whatever digital product, if it is not teamed with an in-field act, then you are going to struggle. And I think, unfortunately, as I say, you know, there's a path of ag tech that's littered with good companies that couldn't find out how to get somebody to pay for it.
Well, you think it's the idea of everything you talked about at the beginning, right? If it doesn't generate net cash farm income, that is the holy grail. And it doesn't matter the how, to your point, whether it's digital, whether it's analog, it's the what. Like, what are you actually doing solving singulation, right? Being more efficient, being more precise with placing a seed in the ground. That's the problem. And the how doesn't matter as much.
Yeah. And I think there's also, as we talk about relationships, the how then comes in after you've established that. So,
yes.
You know, there have been companies where great idea, phenomenal product, but maybe they ballooned too fast, spent cat. There were some operational things that you're like, oh man, if they would have not maybe done this, they would still be here. Right now, unfortunately, there are a number of companies that are kind of shutting down, and some of them had some good products and stuff, but you look back and you're like, well, maybe we shouldn't have hired those 10 people or waited. So staying very lean in ag, I think, is very important early so that you can help that idea move forward.
He is Brad Fruth, Director of Innovation at Bex. Brad, thanks so much for joining us on Ag Bioscience.
It is a pleasure. Thank you.
And thank you for joining us on Ag Bioscience. You can always get the latest Ag Bioscience news and insights from discussions just like this by subscribing wherever you get your podcast. And while you're online, check us out, agrinovusindiana.com. On behalf of the entire Agrinovus team, I'm Mitch Frazier, saying thanks for joining us. We look forward to seeing you real soon.
Ag Bioscience is a podcast by Agrinovus Indiana, hosted by Mitch Frazier, produced by Kayla Chittister and Fabian Rodriguez, photography and design by Kaylee Kerr. If you liked today's episode, subscribe, rate, and review so we can bring you more conversations just like this. Get all episodes of Ag Bioscience at agrinovusindiana.com.